Harlan felt feverish. His clothes were choking him. Was this nightmare to go on forever? Foolish, irrelevant chatter. For what? Why? Why didn't eternity end? Why didn't the clean peace of non-reality reach out for them? Great time, what was wrong? Twistle said, "Don't you believe me?" Harlan shouted, "Why should I? They came to look at me, didn't they? At that breakfast? Why should they have done that if they didn't know of the report? They came to look at the queer phenomenon who had broken the laws of eternity, but who couldn't be touched for one more day. One more day, and then the project would be over. They came to gloat for the tomorrow they were expecting." "My boy, there was nothing of that. They wanted to see you only because they were human. Councilmen are human, too. They could not witness the final kettle drive because the Melanson memoir did not place them at the scene. They could not interview Cooper, since the memoir made no mention of that either. Yet they wanted something. Father Time, boy, don't you see? They would want something. You were as close as they could get, so they brought you close and stared at you."
"I don't believe you."
"It's the truth,"
Harlan said.
"Is it?" "And while we ate, Councilman Senor talked of a man meeting himself he obviously knew about my illegal trips into the 482nd, and my nearly meeting myself. It was his way of poking fun at me, enjoying himself, cutely, at my expense."
Twistle said,
"Senor? You worried about Senor? Do you know the pathetic figure he is? His home when is the 803rd? One of the few cultures in which the human body is deliberately disfigured to meet the aesthetic requirements of the time. It is rendered hairless at adolescence. Do you know what that means in the continuity of man? Surely you do. A disfigurement sets men apart from their ancestors and descendants. Men of the 803rd are poor risks as eternals. They are too different from the rest of us. Few are chosen. Senor is the only one of his century ever to sit on the council. Don't you see how that affects him? Surely you understand what insecurity means. Did it ever occur to you that a councilman could be insecure? Senor has to listen to discussions involving the eradication of his reality for the very characteristic that makes him so conspicuous among us. And eradicating it would leave him one of a very few in all the generation to be disfigured as he is. Someday it will happen. He finds refuge in philosophy. He overcompensates by taking the lead in conversation, by deliberately airing unpopular or unaccepted viewpoints. His man meeting himself paradox is a case in point. I told you that he used it to predict disaster for the project, and it was we, the councilmen, that he was attempting to annoy, not you. It had nothing to do with you. Nothing."
Twistle had grown heated. In the long emotion of his words, he seemed to forget where he was and the crisis that faced them. For he slipped back into the quick-gestured, uneasily motioned gnome that Harlan knew so well. He even slipped a cigarette from his sleeve pouch and had all but frictioned it into combustion. But then he stopped, wheeled, and looked at Harlan again, reaching back through all his own words to what Harlan had last said, as though until that moment he had not heard them properly. He said,
"What do you mean you almost met yourself?"
Harlan told him briefly and went on,
"You didn't know that?" "No."
There were a few moments of silence that were as welcome to the feverish Harlan as water would have been.
Twistle said, "Is that it? What if you had met yourself?"
"I didn't."
Twistle ignored that. "There is always room for random variation. With an infinite number of realities, there can be no such thing as determinism. Suppose that in the Melanson reality, in the previous turn of the cycle..."
"The circle goes on forever?" asked Harlan, with what wonder he could still find in himself.
"Do you think only twice? Do you think two is a magic number? It's a matter of infinite turns of the circle in finite physiotime. Just as you can draw a pencil round and round the circumference of a circle infinitely, yet enclose a finite area. In previous turns of the cycle you had not met yourself,
This one time, the statistical uncertainty of things made it possible for you to meet yourself. Reality had to change to prevent the meeting, and in the new reality, you did not send Cooper back to the 24th, but...
Harlan cried. What's all this talk about? What are you getting at? It's all done. Everything. Let me alone now. Let me alone!
I want you to know you've done wrong. I want you to realize you did the wrong thing.
I didn't. And even if I did, it's done.
But it is not done. Listen just a little while longer.
Twistle was wheedling, almost crooning with an agonized gentleness.
You will have your girl. I promised that. I still promise it. She will not be harmed. You will not be harmed, I promise you this. It is my personal guarantee.
Harlan stared at him wide-eyed.
But it's too late. What's the use?
It is not too late. Things are not irreparable. With your help, we can succeed yet. I must have your help. You must realize that you did wrong. I am trying to explain this to you. You must want to undo what you have done.
Harlan licked his dry lips with a dry tongue and thought,
he is mad. His mind can't accept the truth, or does the council know more?
Did it? Did it? Could it reverse the verdict of the changes? Could they halt time or reverse it?
He said, you locked me in the control room, kept me helpless, you thought, till it was all over.
You said you were afraid something might go wrong with you, that you might not be able to carry on with your part.
That was meant to be a threat.
I took it literally. Forgive me. I must have your help.
It came to that. Harlan's help must be had.
Was he mad? Was Harlan mad?
Did madness have meaning or anything at all, for that matter? The council needed his help. For that help, they would promise him anything.
Noyes, computership.
What would they not promise him? And when his help was done with, what would he get? He would not be fooled a second time.
No, he said.
You will have Noyes.
You mean the council will be willing to break the laws of eternity once the danger is safely gone? I don't believe it.
How could the danger safely be passed? A sane scrap of his mind demanded.
What was this all about? The council will never know.
Would you be willing to break the laws? You're the ideal, eternal. With the danger gone, you would obey the law. You couldn't act otherwise.
Twistle reddened, blotchily, high on each cheekbone. From the old face, all shrewdness and strength drained away. There was left only a strange sorrow.
I will keep my word to you and break the law, said Twistle, for a reason you don't imagine. I don't know how much time is left us before eternity disappears. It could be hours. It could be months. But I have spent so much time in the hope of bringing you to reason that I will spend a little more. Will you listen to me? Please?
Harlan hesitated. Then, out of a conviction of the uselessness of all things, as much as out of anything else, said wearily,
Go on. I have heard,
began Twistle,
that I was born old, that I cut my teeth on a microcomputerplex, that I keep my hand computer in a special pocket of my pajamas when I sleep, that my brain is made up of little force relays in endless parallel hookups, and that each corpuscle of my blood is a microscopic spatio-temporal chart floating in computer oil. All these stories come to me eventually, and I think I must be a little proud of them. Maybe I go around believing them a bit. It's a foolish thing for an old man to do, but it makes life a little easier. Does that surprise you? That I must find a way to make life easier? I, Senior Computer Twistle, Senior Member of the All-When Council. Maybe that's why I smoke. Ever think of that? I have to have a reason, you know. Eternity is essentially an unsmoking society, and most of time is, too. I've thought of that often. I sometimes think it's a rebellion against eternity,
Something to take the place of a greater rebellion that failed? No, it's all right. A tear or two won't hurt me. And it isn't pretense, believe me. It's just that I haven't thought about this for a long time. It isn't pleasant. It involved a woman, of course, as your affair did. That's not coincidence. It's almost inevitable, if you stop to think of it. An eternal who must sell the normal satisfactions of family life for a handful of perforations on foil is ripe for infection. That's one of the reasons Eternity must take the precautions it does, and apparently that's also why Eternals are so ingenious in evading the precautions once in a while. I remember my woman. It's foolish of me to do so, perhaps. I can't remember anything else about that physio time. My old colleagues are only names in the record books. The changes I supervised, all but one, are only items in the computerplex memory pools. I remember her, though, very well. Perhaps you can understand that. I had had a long-standing request for a liaison in the books, and after I achieved status as a junior computer, she was assigned to me. She was a girl of this very century, the 575th. I didn't see her until after the assignment, of course. She was intelligent and kind, not beautiful or even pretty, but then, even when young, yes, I was young, never mind the myths, I was not noted for my own looks. We were well suited to one another by temperament, she and I, and if I were a timed man, I would have been proud to have her as my wife. I told her that many times. I believe it pleased her. I know it was the truth. Not all Eternals, who must take their women as and how computing permits, are that fortunate. In that particular reality, she was to die young, of course, and none of her analogues was available for liaison. At first, I took that philosophically. After all, it was her short lifetime which made it possible for her to live with me without deleteriously affecting reality. I am ashamed of that now, of the fact that I was glad she had a short time to live. Just at first, that is, just at first. I visited her as often as spatio-temporal charting allowed. I squeezed every minute out of it, giving up meals and sleep when necessary, shifting my labor load shamelessly whenever I could. Her amiability passed the heights of my expectations, and I was in love. I put it bluntly. My experience of love is very small, and understanding it through observation in time is a shaky matter. As far as my understanding went, however, I was in love. What began as the satisfaction of an emotional and physical need became a great deal more. Her imminent death stopped being a convenience and became a calamity. I life-plotted her. I didn't go to the life-plotting departments either, I did it myself. That surprises you, I imagine. It was a misdemeanor, but it was nothing compared to the crimes I committed later. Yes, I, Laban Twissel, Senior Computer Twissel. 3 separate times, a point in physio time came and passed, during which some simple action of my own might have altered her personal reality. Naturally, I knew that no such personally motivated change could possibly be authorized by the Council. Still, I began to feel personally responsible for her death. That was part of my motivation later on, you see. She became pregnant. I took no action, though I should have. I had worked her life plot, modified to include her relationship with me, and I knew pregnancy to be a high probability consequence. As you may or may not know, timed women are occasionally made pregnant by Eternals despite precautions. It is not unheard of. Still, since no Eternal may have a child, such pregnancies as do occur are ended painlessly and safely. There are many methods. My life plotting had indicated she would die before delivery, so I took no precautions. She was happy in her pregnancy, and I wanted her to remain so. So I only watched and tried to smile when she told me she could feel life stirring within her. But then something happened. She gave birth Prematurely. I don't wonder you look that way. I had a child. A real child of my own. You'll find no other Eternal, perhaps, who can say that. That was more than a misdemeanor. That was a serious felony, but it was still nothing. I hadn't expected it. Birth and its problems were an aspect of life with which I had had little experience. I went back to the life plot in panic and found the living child in an alternate solution to a low-probability forklet I had overlooked. A professional life plotter would not have overlooked it, and I had done wrong to trust my own abilities that far. But what could I do now? I couldn't kill the child. The mother had 2 weeks to live. Let the child live with her till then, I thought. 2 weeks of happiness is not an exorbitant gift to ask. The mother died as foreseen, and in the manner foreseen. I sat in her room, for all the time permitted by the spatio-temporal chart, aching with a sorrow all the keener for my having waited for death in full knowledge for over a year. In my arms I held my son and hers. Yes, I let it live. Why do you cry out so? Are you going to condemn me? You cannot know what it means to hold a little atom of your own life in your arms. I may have a computerplex for nerves and spatio-temporal charts for a bloodstream, but I do know. I let it live. I committed that crime too. I put it in the charge of an appropriate organization and returned when I could, in strict temporal sequence, held even with physio-time, to make necessary payments and to watch the boy grow. 2 years went by that way. Periodically I checked the boy's life plot. I was used to breaking that particular rule by now, and was pleased to find that there were no signs of deleterious effects on the then-current reality at probability levels over 0.0001. The boy learned to walk, and mispronounced a few words. He was not taught to call me Daddy. Whatever speculations the timed people of the child care institution might have made concerning me, I don't know. They took their money and said nothing. Then, when the 2 years had passed, the necessities of a change that included the 575th at one wing was brought up before the All-When Council. I, having been lately promoted to assistant computer, was placed in charge. It was the first change ever left to my sole supervision. I was proud, of course, but also apprehensive. My son was an intruder in the reality. He could scarcely be expected to have analogues. Thought of his passage into non-existence saddened me. I worked the change, and I flatter myself, even yet, that I did a flawless job. My first one. But I succumbed to a temptation. I succumbed to it all the more easily because it was becoming an old story now for me. I was a hardened criminal, a habitué of crime. I worked out a new life plot for my son under the new reality, certain of what I would find. But then, for 24 hours without eating or sleeping, I sat in my office, striving with the completed life plot, tearing at it in a despairing effort to find an error. There was no error. The next day, holding back my solution to the change, I worked out a spatio-temporal chart using rough methods of approximation. After all, the reality was not to last long, and entered time at a point more than 30 years upwind from the birth of my child. He was 34 years old as I myself. I introduced myself as a distant relation, making use of my knowledge of his mother's family to do so. He had no knowledge of his father, no memory of my visits to him in his infancy. He was an aeronautical engineer. The 575th was expert in half a dozen varieties of air travel, as it still is in the current reality, and my son was a happy and successful member of his society. He was married to an ardently enamored girl, but would have no children. Nor would the girl have married at all in the reality in which my son had not existed. I had known that from the beginning. I had known there would be no deleterious effects on reality. Otherwise, I might not have found it in my heart to let the boy live. I am not completely abandoned. I spent the day with my son. I spoke to him formally,
smiled politely, took my leave coolly when the spatio-temporal chart dictated. But underneath all that, I watched and absorbed every action, filling myself with him and trying to live one day at least out of a reality that the next day, by physio-time, would no longer have existed. How I longed to visit my wife one last time, too, during that portion of time in which she lived, but I had used every second that had been available to me. I dared not even enter time to see her unseen. I returned to eternity and spent one last horrible night wrestling futilely against what must be. The next morning I handed in my computations together with my recommendations for change. Twistle's voice had lowered to a whisper, and now it stopped. He sat there with his shoulders bent, his eyes fixed on the floor between his knees, and his fingers twisting slowly into and out of a knotted clasp. Harlan, waiting vainly for another sentence out of the old man, cleared his throat. He found himself pitying the man, pitying him despite the many crimes he had committed. He said, "And that's all?" Twistle whispered,
"No. The worst. An analogue of my son did exist. In the new reality, he existed as a paraplegic from the age of 4. 42 years in bed, under circumstances that barred me from arranging to have the nerve-regenerating techniques of the 900s applied to his case, or even for arranging to have his life ended painlessly. That new reality still exists. My son is still out there in the appropriate portion of the century. I did that to him. It was my mind and my computerplex that discovered this new life for him, and my word that ordered the change. I had committed a number of crimes for his sake and for his mother's, but that one last deed, though strictly in accordance with my oath as an eternal, has always seemed to me to be my great crime. The crime."
There was nothing to say, and Harlan said nothing. Twistle said,
"But you see now why I understand your case, why I will be willing to let you have your girl. It would not harm eternity, and, in a way, it would be expiation for my crime."
And Harlan believed. All in one change of mind, he believed. Harlan sank to his knees and lifted his clenched fists to his temples. He bent his head and rocked slowly as savage despair beat through him. He had thrown eternity away and lost Noyes when, except for his Samson smash, he might have saved one and kept the other. Chapter 15. Search Through the Primitive. Twistle was shaking Harlan's shoulders. The old man's voice urgently called his name.
"Harlan! Harlan, for time's sake, man!"
Harlan emerged only slowly from the slough.
"What are we to do?"
"Certainly not this. Not despair. To begin with, listen to me. Forget your technician's view of eternity and look at it through a computer's eyes. The view is more sophisticated. When you alter something in time and create a reality change, the change may take place at once. Why should that be?"
Harlan said shakily, "Because your alteration has made the change inevitable."
"Has it? You could go back and reverse your alteration, couldn't you?"
"I suppose so.
I never did, though. Or anyone that I heard of." "Right. There is no intention of reversing an alteration, so it goes through as planned. But here we have something else. An unintentional alteration. You sent Cooper into the wrong century, and now I firmly intend to reverse that alteration and bring Cooper back here."
"For time's sake, how?"
"I'm not sure yet, but there must be a way. If there were no way, the alteration would be irreversible. Change would come at once. But change has not come. We are still in the reality of the Melanson memoir. That means the alteration is reversible and will be reversed.
What?
Harlan's nightmare was expanding and swirling, growing murkier and more engulfing.
There must be some way of knitting the circle in time together again, and our ability to find the way to do it must be a high-probability affair. As long as our reality exists, we can be certain that the solution remains high probability. If at any moment you or I make the wrong decision, if the probability of healing the circle falls below some crucial magnitude, eternity disappears. Do you understand?
Harlan was not sure that he did. He wasn't trying very hard. Slowly he got to his feet and stumbled his way into a chair.
You mean we can get Cooper back?
And send him to the right place, yes. Catch him at the moment he leaves the kettle, and he may end up in his proper place in the 24th, no more than a few physio hours older. Physio days, at the most.
It would be an alteration, of course, but undoubtedly not enough of one. Reality would be rocked, boy, but not upset. But how do we get him?
We know there's a way, or eternity wouldn't be existing this moment. As to what that way is, that is why I need you. Why I fought to get you back on my side. You're the expert on the primitive. Tell me.
I can't, groaned Harlan.
You can, insisted Twistle.
There was suddenly no trace of age or weariness in the old man's voice. His eyes were ablaze with the light of combat, and he wielded his cigarette like a lance. Even to Harlan's regret-drugged senses, the man seemed to be enjoying himself, actually enjoying himself, now that battle had been joined.
We can reconstruct the event, said Twistle. Here is the thrust control. You're standing at it, waiting for the signal. It comes. You make contact, and at the same time squeeze the power thrust in the downwind direction. How far?
I don't know, I tell you, I don't know.
You don't know, but your muscles do. Stand there and take the control in your hand. Get hold of yourself. Take them, boy. You're waiting for the signal. You're hating me. You're hating the council. You're hating eternity. You're wearying your heart out for Noyes. Put yourself back at that moment. Feel what you felt then. Now, I'll set the clock in motion again. I'll give you 1 minute, boy, to remember your emotions and force them back into your thalamus. Then, at the approach of zero, let your right hand jerk the control as it had done before. Then, take your hand away. Don't move it back again. Are you ready?
I don't think I can do it.
You don't think, Father Time. You have no choice. Is there another way you can get back your girl?
There wasn't. Harlan forced himself back to the controls, and as he did so, emotion flooded back. He did not have to call on it. Repeating the physical movements brought them back. The red hairline on the clock started moving. Detachedly, he thought, the last minute of life. -30 seconds. He thought,
it will not hurt. It is not death.
He tried to think only of Noyes. -15 seconds.
Noyes.
Harlan's left hand moved a switch down toward contact. -12 seconds.
Contact.
His right hand moved. -5 seconds.
Noyes.
His right hand zeroed spasmodically. He jumped away, panting. Twistle came forward, peering at the dial.
20th century,
he said.
19.38, to be exact.
Harlan choked out.
I don't know. I tried to feel the same, but it was different. I knew what I was doing, and that made it different.
Twistle said,
I know, I know. Maybe it's all wrong. Call it a first approximation.
He paused a moment in mental calculation, took a pocket computer half out of its container, and thrust it back without consulting it.
To time with the decimal points. Say the probability is 0.99 that you sent him back to the second quarter of the 20th, somewhere between 19.25 and 19.50, all right?
I don't know.
Well, now look. If I make a firm decision to concentrate on that part of the primitive to the exclusion of all else, and if I am wrong,
The chances are that I will have lost my chance to keep the circle in time closed and eternity will disappear. The decision itself will be the crucial point, the minimum necessary change, the MNC, to bring about the change. I now make the decision. I decide definitely.
Harlan looked about cautiously, as though reality had grown so fragile that a sudden head movement might shatter it.
Harlan said, "I'm thoroughly conscious of eternity."
Twistle's normality had infected him to the point where his voice sounded firm in his own ears.
"Then eternity still exists," said Twistle, in a blunt, matter-of-fact manner, "and we have made the right decision. Now there's nothing more to do here for the while. Let's get to my office and we can let the subcommittee of the council swarm over this place, if that will make them any happier. As far as they are concerned, the project has ended successfully. If it doesn't, they'll never know. Nor we."
Twistle studied his cigarette and said, "The question that now confronts us is this. What will Cooper do when he finds himself in the wrong century?"
"I don't know. One thing is obvious. He's a bright lad, intelligent, imaginative, wouldn't you say?"
"Well, he's Melanson."
"Exactly. And he wondered if he would end up wrong. One of his last questions was, 'What if I don't end up in the right spot?' Do you remember?"
"Well," Harlan had no idea where this was leading.
"So he is mentally prepared for being displaced in time. He will do something, try to reach us, try to leave traces for us. Remember, for part of his life he was an Eternal. That's an important thing."
Twistle blew a smoke ring, hooked it with a finger, and watched it curl about and break up.
"He's used to the notion of communication across time. He is not likely to surrender to the thought of being marooned in time. He'll know that we're looking for him."
Harlan said, "Without kettles, and with no eternity in the 20th, how would he go about communicating with us?"
"With you, technician, with you. Use the singular. You're our expert on the primitive. You taught Cooper about the primitive. You're the one he would expect to be capable of finding his traces."
"What traces, computer?" Twistle's shrewd old face stared up at Harlan, its lines crinkling.
"It was intended to leave Cooper in the primitive. He is without the protection of an enclosing shield of physio-time. His entire life is woven into the fabric of time and will remain so until you and I reverse the alteration. Likewise, woven into the fabric of time is any artifact, sign, or message he may have left for us. Surely there must be particular sources you used in studying the 20th century, documents, archives, films, artifacts, reference works. I mean primary sources, dating from the time itself."
"Yes."
"And he studied them with you?"
"Yes."
"And is there any particular reference that was your favorite? One that he knew you were intimately acquainted with, so that you would recognize in it some reference to himself?"
"I see what you're driving at, of course," said Harlan.
He grew thoughtful.
"Well?" asked Twistle with an edge of impatience.
Harlan said, "My news magazines, almost surely. News magazines were a phenomenon of the early 20s. The one of which I have nearly a complete set dates from early in the 20th and continues well into the 22nd.
"Good.
Now, is there any way, do you suppose, in which Cooper could make use of that news magazine to carry a message? Remember, he'd know you'd be reading the periodical, that you'd be acquainted with it, that you'd know your way about in it."
"I don't know." Harlan shook his head. "The magazine affected an artificial style. It was selective rather than inclusive and quite unpredictable. It would be difficult or even impossible to rely on its printing something you would plan to have it print. Cooper couldn't very well create news and be sure of its appearance. Even if Cooper managed to get a position on its editorial staff, which is very unlikely, he couldn't be certain that his exact wording would pass the various editors. I don't see a computer."
Twistle said, "For time's sake, think. Concentrate on that news magazine. You're in the 20th, and you're Cooper, with his education and background. You taught the boy, Harlan. You molded his thinking. Now what would he do? How would he go about placing something in the magazine? something with the exact wording he wants.
Harlan's eyes widened. An advertisement.
What?
An advertisement. A paid notice, which they would be compelled to print exactly as requested. Cooper and I discussed them occasionally.
Ah, yes. They have that sort of thing in the 186th, said Twistle.
Not like the 20th. The 20th is peak in that respect. The cultural milieu...
Considering the advertisement now, interposed Twistle hastily. What kind would it be?
I wish I knew. Twistle stared at the lighted end of his cigarette, as though seeking inspiration.
He can't say anything directly. He can't say, Cooper of the 78th, stranded in the 20th and calling eternity.
How can you be sure?
Impossible.
To give the 20th information we know they did not have would be as damaging to the Melanson Circle as would wrong action on our part. We're still here, so in his whole lifetime, in the current reality of the primitive, he's done no harm of that sort.
Besides which, said Harlan, retreating from the contemplation of the circular reasoning which seemed to bother Twistle so little, the news magazine is not likely to agree to publish anything which seems mad to it, or which it cannot understand. It would suspect fraud or some form of illegality and would not wish to be implicated, so Cooper couldn't use standard intertemporal for his message.
It would have to be something subtle, said Twistle. He would have to use indirection.
He would have to place an advertisement that would seem perfectly normal to the men of the primitive, perfectly normal,
and yet something that is obvious to us once we knew what we were searching for, very obvious. Obvious at a glance, because it would have to be found among uncounted individual items. How big do you suppose it would be, Harlan? Are those advertisements expensive?
Quite expensive, I believe.
And Cooper would have to hoard his money. Besides which, to avoid the wrong kind of attention, it would have to be small anyway. Guess, Harlan, how large?
Harlan spread his hands.
Half a column?
Column?
They were printed magazines, you know, on paper, with print arranged in columns.
Oh, yes. I can't seem to separate literature and film somehow. Well, we have a first approximation of another sort now. We must look for a half-column advertisement which will practically, at a glance, give evidence that the man who placed it came from another century, in the up-when direction, of course, and yet which is so normal an advertisement that no man of that century would see anything suspicious in it.
Harlan said, "What if I don't find it?"
"You will.
Eternity exists, doesn't it?
As long as it does, we're on the right track.
Tell me, can you recall such an advertisement in your work with Cooper? Anything which struck you, even momentarily, as odd, queer, unusual, subtly wrong?"
"No. I don't want an answer so quickly. Take 5 minutes and think."
"No point. At the time I was going over the news magazines with Cooper, he hadn't been in the 20th.
"Please, boy, use your head. Sending Cooper to the 20th has introduced an alteration. There's no change. It isn't an irreversible alteration. But there have been some changes, with a small c, or micro-changes, as it is usually referred to in computation. At the instant Cooper was sent to the 20th, the advertisement appeared in the appropriate issue of the magazine. Your own reality has micro-changed in the sense that you may have looked at the page with that advertisement on it rather than one without that advertisement as you did in the previous reality. Do you understand?"
Harlan was again bewildered, almost as much at the ease with which Twistle picked his way through the jungle of temporal logic as at the paradoxes of time. He shook his head.
"I remember nothing of the sort." "Well, then, where do you keep the files of that periodical?"
"I had a special library built on level 2, using the Cooper priority."
"Good enough," said Twistle. "Let's go there now."
Harlan watched Twistle stare curiously at the old bound volumes in the library, and then take one down. They were so old that the fragile paper had to be preserved by special methods, and they creaked under Twistle's insufficiently gentle handling. Harlan winced. In better times, he would have ordered Twistle away from the books,
senior computer though he was. The old man peered through the crinkling pages and silently mouthed the archaic words.
"This is the English the linguists are always talking about, isn't it?"
he asked, tapping a page.
"Yes, English," muttered Harlan.
Twistle put the volume back.
"Heavy and clumsy."
Harlan shrugged. To be sure, most of the centuries of eternity were film eras. A respectable minority were molecular recording eras. Still, print and paper were not unheard of. He said, "Books don't require the investment in technology that films do." Twistle rubbed his chin.
"Quite. Shall we get started?"
He took another volume down from the shelf, opening it at random and staring at the page with odd intentness. Harlan thought, "Does the man think he's going to hit the solution by a lucky stab?" The thought might have been correct, for Twistle, meeting Harlan's appraising eyes, reddened and put the book back. Harlan took the first volume of the 19.25th centicentury and began turning the pages regularly. Only his right hand and his eyes moved. The rest of his body remained at rigid attention. At what seemed eonic intervals to himself, Harlan rose, grunting for a new volume. On those occasions, there would be the coffee break, or the sandwich break, or the other breaks. Harlan said heavily, "It's useless you're staying."
Twistle said, "Do I bother you?"
"No."
"Then I'll stay," muttered Twistle.
Throughout, he wandered occasionally to the bookshelves, staring helplessly at the bindings. The sparks of his furious cigarettes burned his finger ends at times, but he disregarded them. A physio day ended. Sleep was poor and sparse. Mid-morning, between two volumes, Twistle lingered over his last sip of coffee and said,
"I wonder sometimes why I didn't throw up my computer ship after the matter of my—"
Harlan nodded.
"I felt like it,"
the old man went on.
"I felt like it. For physio months, I hoped desperately that no changes would come my way. I got morbid about it. I began to wonder if changes were right. Funny, the tricks emotions will play on you." "You know primitive history, Harlan. You know what it was like. Its reality flowed blindly along the line of maximum probability. If that maximum probability involved a pandemic or 10 centuries of slave economy, a breakdown of technology, or even what's really bad? Even an atomic war, if one had been possible, then why, by time, it happened. There was nothing to stop it. But where eternity exists, that's been stopped. Up when, from the 28th, things like that don't happen?
Father Time, we've lifted our reality to a level of well-being far beyond anything primitive times could imagine.
To a level which, but for the interference of eternity, would have been very low probability indeed."
Harlan thought, in shame,
"What's he trying to do? Get me to work harder? I'm doing my best."
Twistle said,
"If we miss our chance now, eternity disappears, probably through all of physio time. And in one vast change, all reality reverts to maximum probability with, I am positive, atomic warfare and the end of man."
Harlan said, "I'd better get on to the next volume." At the next break, Twistle said helplessly,
"There's so much to do. Isn't there a faster way?"
Harlan said, "Name it. To me it seems that I must look at every single page and look at every part of it, too. How can I do it faster?" Methodically, he turned the pages.
"Eventually," said Harlan, "the print starts blurring, and that means it's time for sleep."
A second physio day ended. At 10:22 a.m. standard physio time of the third physio day of the search, Harlan stared at a page in quiet wonder and said,
"This is it."
Twistle didn't absorb the statement. He said,
"What?"
Harlan looked up, his face twisted with astonishment.
"You know, I didn't believe it. By time,
I never really believed it, even while you were working out all that rigmarole about news magazines and advertisements. Twistle had absorbed it now.
You found it.
He leaped at the volume Harlan was holding, clutching at it with shaking fingers. Harlan held it out of reach and slammed the volume shut.
Just a moment. You won't find it, even if I showed you the page.
What are you doing? Shrieked Twistle. You've lost it.
It's not lost. I know where it is. But first...
First what?
Harlan said, there's one point remaining, Computer Twistle. You say I can have Noyes? Bring her to me then. Let me see her.
Twistle stared at Harlan, his thin white hair in disarray.
Are you joking?
No, said Harlan sharply. I'm not joking. You assured me that you would make arrangements. Are you joking? Noyes and I would be together. You promised that.
Yes, I did. That part's settled.
Then produce her alive, well, and untouched.
But I don't understand you. I don't have her. No one has. She's still in the far-up when, where Finge reported her to be. No one has touched her. Great time! I told you she was safe.
Harlan stared at the old man and grew tense. He said, chokingly,
You're playing with words. All right, she's in the far-up when, but what good is that to me? Take down the barrier at the 100,000th.
The what?
The barrier. The kettle won't pass it.
You never said anything of this, said Twistle wildly.
I haven't, said Harlan with sharp surprise.
Hadn't he? He had thought of it often enough. Had he never said a word about it? He couldn't recall at that. But then he hardened.
He said, All right, I tell you now. Take it down.
But the thing is impossible. A barrier against the kettle? A temporal barrier?
Are you telling me you didn't put one up?
I didn't. By time, I swear it.
Then...
Harlan felt himself grow pale.
Then the council did it. They knew of all this, and they've taken action independently of you, and by all of time and reality, they can whistle for their ad and for Cooper. For Melanson and all of eternity, they'll have none of it. None of it!
Wait, wait!
Twistle yanked despairingly at Harlan's elbow.
Keep hold of yourself. Think, boy, think. The council put up no barrier.
It's there.
But they can't have put up such a barrier. No one could have. It's theoretically impossible.
You don't know it all. It's there.
I know more than anyone else on the council, and such a thing is impossible. But it's there.
But if it is... And Harlan grew sufficiently aware of his surroundings to realize that there was a kind of abject fear in Twistle's eyes, a fear that had not been there even when he first learned of Cooper's misdirection and of the impending end of eternity.
Chapter 16. The Hidden Centuries.
Andrew Harlan watched the men at work with abstracted eyes. They ignored him politely because he was a technician. Ordinarily, he would have ignored them somewhat less politely because they were maintenance men. But now, he watched them, and in his misery, he even caught himself envying them. They were service personnel from the Department of Intertemporal Transportation, in dun-gray uniforms with shoulder patches showing a red, double-headed arrow against a black background. They used intricate force field equipment to test the kettle motors and the degrees of hyper-freedom along the kettleways. They had, Harlan imagined, little theoretical knowledge of temporal engineering, but it was obvious that they had a vast practical knowledge of the subject. Harlan had not learned much concerning maintenance when he was a cub, or, to put it more accurately, he had not really wished to learn. Cubs who did not make the grade were put into maintenance. The unspecialized profession, as the euphemism had it, was the hallmark of failure, and the average cub automatically avoided the subject. Yet now, as he watched the maintenance men at work, they seemed to Harlan to be quietly, tensionlessly efficient, reasonably happy. Why not? They outnumbered the specialists, The true Eternals 10-1. They had a society of their own, residential levels devoted to them, pleasures of their own. Their labor was fixed at so many hours per physio day, and there was no social pressure in their case to make them relate their spare time activity to their profession. They had time, as specialists did not, to devote to the literature and film dramatizations culled out of the various realities. It was they, after all, who probably had the better rounded personalities. It was the specialist's life which was harried and affected, artificial in comparison with the sweet and simple life in maintenance. Maintenance was the foundation of eternity. Strange that such an obvious fact had not struck him earlier. They supervised the importation of food and water from time, the disposal of waste, the functioning of the power plants. They kept all the machinery of eternity running smoothly. If every specialist were to die of a stroke on the spot, maintenance could keep eternity going indefinitely. Yet, were maintenance to disappear, the specialists would have to abandon eternity in days or die miserably. Did maintenance men resent the loss of their home wens or their womanless, childless lives? Was security from poverty, disease, and reality change sufficient compensation? Were their views ever consulted on any matter of importance? Harlan felt some of the fire of the social reformer within him. Senior Computer Twistle broke Harlan's train of thought by bustling in at a half run, looking even more haunted than he had an hour before when he had left with maintenance already at work. Harlan thought, how does he keep it up? He's an old man. Twistle glanced about him with bird-like brightness as the men automatically straightened up to respectful attention. He said, what about the kettleways? One of the men responded, nothing wrong, sir. The ways are clear, the fields mesh. You've checked everything? Yes, sir. As far up when as the department's stations go. Twistle said, then go. There was no mistaking the brusque insistence of his dismissal. They bowed respectfully, turned, and hastened out briskly. Twistle and Harlan were alone in the kettleways. Twistle turned to him. You'll stay here, please. Harlan shook his head. I must go. Twistle said, surely you understand. If anything happens to me, you still know how to find Cooper. If anything happens to you, what can I or any Eternal or any combination of Eternals do alone? Harlan shook his head again. Twistle put a cigarette between his lips. He said, Senor is suspicious. He's called me several times in the last two physio days. Why am I in seclusion, he wants to know. When he finds out I've ordered a complete overhaul of the kettleway machinery, I must go now, Harlan. I can't delay. I don't want delay. I'm ready. You insist on going? If there's no barrier, there'll be no danger. Even if there is, I've been there already and come back. What are you afraid of, computer? I don't want to risk anything I don't have to. Then use your logic, computer. Make the decision that I'm to go with you. If eternity still exists after that, then it means that the circle can still be closed. It means we'll survive. If it's a wrong decision, then eternity will pass into non-existence. But it will anyway if I don't go, because without Noyes, I'll make no move to get Cooper, I swear it. Twistle said, I'll bring her back to you. If it is so simple and safe, there will be no harm if I come along. Twistle was in an obvious torture of hesitation. He said gruffly, well then, come. And eternity survived. Twistle's haunted look did not disappear once they were within the kettle. He stared at the skimming figures of the temperometer, even the scalar gauge, which measured in units of kilocenturies, and which the men had adjusted for this particular purpose, was clicking at minute intervals. He said, you should not have come. Harlan shrugged. Why not? It disturbs me. No sensible reason. Call it a long-standing superstition of mine, it makes me restless. He clasped his hands together, holding them tightly. Harlan said,
I don't understand you.
Twistle seemed eager to talk, as though to exorcise some mental demon. He said,
Maybe you'll appreciate this at that. You're the expert on the primitive. How long did man exist in the primitive?
Harlan said, 10,000 centuries. 15,000 maybe.
Yes. Beginning as a kind of primitive ape-like creature and ending as Homo sapiens, right?
It's common knowledge, yes.
Then it must be common knowledge that evolution proceeds at a fairly rapid pace. 15,000 centuries from ape to Homo sapiens.
Well?
Well, I'm from a century in the 30,000s.
Harlan could not help starting. He had never known Twistle's home when, or known of anyone who did.
I'm from a century in the 30,000s,
Twistle said again.
And you're from the 95th. The time between our home whens is twice the total length of time of man's existence in the primitive, yet what change is there between us? I was born with 4 fewer teeth than you, and without an appendix. The physiological differences about end with that. Our metabolism is almost the same. The major difference is that your body can synthesize the steroid nucleus and my body can't, so that I require cholesterol in my diet and you don't. I was able to breed with a woman of the 575th. That's how undifferentiated with time the species is.
Harlan was unimpressed. He had never questioned the basic identity of man throughout the centuries. It was one of those things you lived with and took for granted. He said, There have been cases of species living unchanged through millions of centuries.
Not many, though. And it remains a fact that the cessation of human evolution seems to coincide with the development of eternity. Just coincidence? It's not a question which is considered except by a few here and there, like Senor. And I've never been a Senor. I didn't believe speculation was proper. If something couldn't be checked by a computerplex, it had no business taking up the time of a computer, and yet, in my younger days, I sometimes thought...
Of what? Harlan thought, well, it's something to listen to anyway.
I sometimes thought about eternity as it was when it was first established. It stretched over just a few centuries in the 30s and 40s. And its function was mostly trade. It interested itself in the reforestation of denuded areas, shipping topsoil back and forth, fresh water, fine chemicals. Those were simple days. But then we discovered reality changes. Senior computer Henry Wadsman, in the dramatic manner with which we are all acquainted, prevented a war by removing the safety brake of a congressman's ground vehicle. After that, more and more... Eternity shifted its center of gravity from trade to reality change. Why?
Harlan said, The obvious reason. Betterment of humanity.
Yes, yes, in normal times I think so too, but I'm talking of my nightmare. What if there were another reason? An unexpressed one. An unconscious one. A man who can travel into the indefinite future may meet men as far advanced over himself as he himself is over an ape. Why not?
Maybe, but men are men.
Even in the 70,000th, yes, I know. And have our reality changes had something to do with it? We bred out the unusual. Even Senor's home when, with its hairless creatures, is under continual question, and that's harmless enough. Perhaps, in all honesty, in all sincerity, we've prevented human evolution because we don't want to meet the supermen.
Still no spark was struck. Harlan said, Then it's done, what does it matter?
But what if the Superman exists just the same, further up when than we can reach? We control only to the 70,000th. Beyond that are the hidden centuries. Why are they hidden? Because evolved man does not want to deal with us and bars us from his time? Why do we allow them to remain hidden? Because we don't want to deal with them, and having failed to enter in our first attempt, we refuse even to make additional attempts? I don't say it's our conscious reason, but conscious or unconscious, it's a reason.
Grant everything, said Harlan sullenly. They're out of our reach, and we're out of theirs. Live and let live. Twistle seemed struck by the phrase. live and let live. But we don't. We make changes. The changes extend only through a few centuries before temporal inertia causes its effects to die out. You remember Senor brought that up as one of the unanswered problems of time at our breakfast? What he might have said was that it's all a matter of statistics. Some changes affect more centuries than others. Theoretically, any number of centuries can be affected by the proper change, 100 centuries, 1,000, 100,000. Evolved man of the hidden centuries may know that. Suppose he is disturbed by the possibility that someday a change may reach him clear to the 200,000th.
It's useless to worry about such things, said Harlan, with the air of a man who had much greater worries.
But suppose,
went on Twistle in a whisper,
they were calm enough as long as we left the sections of the hidden centuries empty. It meant we weren't aggressing. Suppose this truce, or whatever you wish to call it, were broken, and someone appeared to have established permanent residence upwind from the 70,000th. Suppose they thought it might mean the first of a serious invasion. They can bar us from their time, so their science is that far advanced beyond ours. Suppose they may further do what seems impossible to us and throw a barrier across the Kettleways, cutting us off.
And now Harlan was on his feet in full horror.
They have Noyes.
I don't know. It's speculation. Maybe there is no barrier. Maybe there was something wrong with your
There was a barrier, yelled Harlan. What other explanation is there? Why didn't you tell me this before?
I don't believe it, groaned Twistle. I still don't. I shouldn't have said a word of this foolish dreaming. My own fears, the question of Cooper, everything. But wait, just a few minutes.
He pointed at the temperometer. The scaler indicated them to be between the 95,000th and 96,000th centuries. Twistle's hand on the controls slowed the kettle. The 99,000th was passed. The scaler's motions stopped. The individual centuries could be read. 99,726, 99,727, 99,728.
What will we do? Muttered Harlan.
Twistle shook his head in a gesture that spoke eloquently of patience and hope, but perhaps also of helplessness. 99,851. 99,852, 99,853. Harlan steeled himself for the shock of the barrier and thought desperately. Would preserving eternity be the only means of finding time to fight back at the creatures of the hidden centuries? How else recover Noyes? Dash back, back to the 575th and work like fury to 99,938, 99,939. 99,940. Harlan held his breath. Twistle slowed the kettle further, let it creep. It responded perfectly to the controls. 99,984. 99,985. 99,986.
Now, said Harlan in a whisper, unaware that he had made any sound at all.
99,998. 99,999. 100,000. 100,101. 100,102. The numbers mounted, and the two men watched them continue to mount in paralytic silence. Then Twistle cried,
"There is no barrier!"
And Harlan answered,
There was.
Then in agony, maybe they've got her, and need a barrier no longer. 111,394. Harlan leaped from the kettle and raised his voice.
Noyes! Noyes!
The echoes bounced off the walls of the empty section in hollow syncopation. Twistle, climbing out more sedately, called after the younger man.
Wait, Harlan!
That was useless. Harlan, at a run, was hurtling along the corridors toward that portion of the section they had made a kind of home.
He thought vaguely of the possibility of meeting one of Twissel's evolved men, and momentarily his skin prickled. But then that was drowned in his urgent need to find Noyes.
Noyes!
And all at once, so quickly that she was in his arms before he was sure he had seen her at all, she was there with him, and her arms were around him, and clutching him, and her cheek was against his shoulder, and her dark hair was soft against his chin.
Andrew,
she said, her voice muffled by the pressure of his body.
Where were you? It's been days and I was getting frightened.
Harlan held her out at arm's length, staring at her with a kind of hungry solemnity.
Are you all right?
I'm all right. I thought something might have happened to you. I thought...
She broke off, terror springing into her eyes, and gasped,
Andrew!
Harlan whirled. It was only Twissel, panting. Noyes must have gained confidence from Harlan's expression. She said more quietly,
Do you know him, Andrew? Is it all right?
Harlan said, It's all right. This is my superior, Senior Computer Laban Twissel. He knows of you.
A senior computer?
Noyes shrank away. Twissel advanced slowly.
I will help you, my child.
I will help you both. The technician has my promise, if he would only believe it.
My apologies, computer, said Harlan stiffly, and not yet entirely repentant.
Forgiven, said Twissel.
He held out his hand, took the girl's reluctant one.
Tell me, girl, has it been well with you here?
I've been worried.
There's been no one here since Harlan last left you?
No, sir.
No one at all? Nothing?
She shook her head. Her dark eyes sought Harlan's.
Why do you ask?
Nothing, girl. A foolish nightmare. Come, we will take you back to the 575th.
On the kettle back, Andrew Harlan sank, by degrees, into a troubled and deepening silence. He did not look up when the 100,000th was passed in the downwind direction, and Twissel had snorted an obvious sigh of relief, as though he had half expected to be trapped on the upwind side. He scarcely moved when Noyes' hand stole into his, and the manner in which he returned the pressure of her fingers was almost mechanical. Noyes slept in another room, and now Twissel's restlessness reached a peak of devouring intensity.
The advertisement boy. You have your woman. My part of the agreement is done.
Silently, still abstracted, Harlan turned the pages of the volume on the desk. He found his page.
It's simple enough, he said, but it's in English. I'll read it to you and then translate it.
It was a small advertisement in the upper left-hand corner of a page, numbered 30. Against an irregular line drawing as background were the unadorned words, in block letters, all the talk of the market. Underneath, in smaller letters, it said, Investments Newsletter, P.O. Box 14, Denver, Colorado. Twissel listened painstakingly to Harlan's translation and was obviously disappointed. He said,
What is the market? What do they mean by that?
The stock market, said Harlan impatiently. A system by which private capital was invested in business, but that's not the point at all. Don't you see the line drawing against which the advertisement is set?
Yes, the mushroom cloud of an A-bomb blast. An attention getter, what about it?
Harlan exploded.
Great time, computer, what's wrong with you? Look at the date of the magazine issue.
He pointed to the top heading, just to the left of the page number. It read, March 28th, 1932. Harlan said,
That scarcely needs translation.
The numbers are about those of standard intertemporal, and you see it's the 19.32nd century. Don't you know that at that time no human being who had ever lived had seen the mushroom cloud? No one could possibly reproduce it so accurately, except...
Now wait. It's just a line pattern, said Twissel,
trying to retain his equilibrium.
It might resemble the mushroom cloud only coincidentally.
Might it? Will you look at the wording again? Harlan's fingers punched out the short lines. All the talk of the market.
The initials spell out
A-T-O-M, which is English for atom. Is that coincidence too?
Not a chance.
Don't you see, computer, how this advertisement fits the conditions you yourself set up? It caught my eye instantly. Cooper knew it would, out of sheer anachronism. At the same time, it has no meaning other than its face value, no meaning at all, for any man of the 19.32nd.
So it must be Cooper.
That's his message. We have the date to the nearest week of a centicentury. We have his mailing address. It is only necessary to go after him, and I'm the only one with enough knowledge of the primitive to manage that.
And you'll go?
Twistle's face was ablaze with relief and happiness.
I'll go. On one condition.
Twistle frowned in a sudden reversal of emotion.
Again, conditions?
The same condition. I'm not adding new ones. Noyes must be safe. She must come with me. I will not leave her behind.
You still don't trust me. In what way have I failed you? What can there be that still disturbs you?
One thing, computer, said Harlan solemnly. One thing still. There was a barrier across the 100,000th.
Why?
That is what still disturbs me.